Welcome, everyone, to Esther Chapter 10, our last chapter as we listen to Grandpa recount the story. I sense a bit of excitement in the old eyebrows, reaching closure, almost time to eat. Now, Chapter 9 was the denouement, the French term for untying all the story's knots. But 10 is the epilogue, the Greek term for after story. Those two together make this story satisfying. So think back. Have all issues been resolved? We began the story with a filthy rich king throwing an opulent banquet to show off the splendor and glory of his majesty, all worldly. And our first question was, where is God? We've reached the end. Did God show up? 10 chapters and still not a single mention of the Lord. Not his name, his title, the spirit, nothing. Not even prayer. So was he absent? Are his people forsaken? Did they fail to return to God, and so he refused to return to them? And perhaps most importantly, has God been faithful to his covenant, and will he be faithful to us? Let's dive in at verse 1. King Xerxes imposed tribute throughout the empire to its distant shores. Seems an odd note here at the close. Xerxes taxed everyone. Perhaps it's here to say that the empire went back to business as usual. Xerxes still has the power, and he still has the wealth. The final word on Xerxes, he taxed us. Again. Verse 2. And all his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Media and Persia? Now, this just got interesting. The king's power and might are recorded in the annals. That's normal. But the greatness of Mordecai, written in the annals of Persian kings? Now, that's something. And contrast Haman. Proverbs 10 tells us, the name of the righteous is used in blessings, but the name of the wicked will rot. Haman's name rotted with time, because his life was corrupt. Mordecai is respected. It should be noted that we do not have any of those annals of the Persian kings with reference to Mordecai. And for that reason, there is debate among historians about the veracity of all this. Perhaps the burning of the Library of Alexandria destroyed such records. I'll leave that debate to scholars. But we have this book and consider the honor to Mordecai to go down in history, literally. And Mordecai's lesson for us? Do right. Even when evil men remain in power, do right. Even when your work goes unnoticed, the king is still the same old king, the taxes are unfair, and you struggle to see God, do right. It matters, and God remembers. Verse 3. Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, and held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews, because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews. What a legacy! The one who encouraged Esther to hide her identity, but then took a stand with his people when it counted, finally established a legacy of working for the good of his people. Mordecai the Jew. And I love the phrase, he spoke up. Not just for some, but for all the Jews. Elie Wiesel, who endured Nazi concentration camps, famously said, "The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference." Mordecai spoke up. Esther saved her people because she cared and because Mordecai spoke up. Back then, his voice was small, no influence or reach, but he was faithful to his orphan cousin and faithful at his job for the king. Faithful with little, then entrusted with much. Do you ever wonder how history will record your story, the books that record your life? Sounds silly, right? But don't forget Revelation, where the books of heaven are opened, and the dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. And what about our hero, Esther? in the end, was this the girl power story I was hoping for? It's interesting that Esther is not mentioned here in the final words. She is, as it were, hidden. It's in her name. Well, almost. Her name means star, which I like. The stars always stir up a sense of God's presence. But her name also sounds like hidden. It's ironic, really. This is surely a girl power story. But Esther's heroism is exercised in a male-dominated culture. She saved her people, but Mordecai gets the promotion, and Mordecai makes the annals. But don't miss, Esther's works are recorded here in God's book. As Hebrews reminds us, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. And perhaps this overlooking of Esther is also a picture. The Holy Spirit might work in 10,000 different ways in our lives, and we forget so quickly. And that brings me back to the key question. Where is God? Well, do you recall Esther's Hebrew name, Hadassah? It means myrtle, like the tree. Funny story, as I was studying, I looked up a verse in Zechariah. Remember, it was just 40 years prior to this story that Zechariah prophesied to the Jews in Jerusalem, "Return to me, and I will return to you." I found it in Zechariah 1, and just four verses later, on the same page, was a vision I had forgotten about. Zechariah sees a man among the myrtle trees. It represents God's unseen presence among his people. And it just happens to be myrtle trees, and I just happened to stumble into it. Do you ever have those moments when you look around the room and you wonder, is God here? Did he set this up? I know he's always everywhere, but seriously, is he here right now? Maybe I stumbled on it by accident. Maybe the myrtle tree connection is coincidental. But Lord, is that you? And I wonder this about a lot of things in my life. So many little coincidences with God's fingerprints. Maybe. Seeing the invisible God isn't simple, but Romans says that God's invisible qualities are clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. And Colossians reminds us that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. And then Hebrews honors Moses because he saw him who is invisible. This is the nature of faith, to see God in the unseen, in the hidden. Not to imagine him in it, but to recognize his actual presence. And what about the question of God's covenant? Has God been faithful to his covenant? The answer to that question runs deeper than you might think. For God established more than one covenant with the Jewish people. Remember in chapter 9 when we saw God's victory over the enemies of his people? Well, that was part of his covenant promise. Deuteronomy 28. The Lord will grant that the enemies who rise up against you will be defeated before you. They will come at you from one direction, but flee from you in seven. Great, God was faithful. But hold on. That covenant promise was conditional if they fully obey God. But they didn't obey. That's why they're in exile and their enemies are in power. The same promise was given in reverse for disobedience. Israel disobeyed for generations, and God was faithful to that reverse promise. Israel fled in seven directions and landed in exile. So then, why did God rescue this time? Because there was another covenant. Long before the law, God made a promise to Abraham, unconditional, to make him a great nation. In Genesis 12, "I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So it turns out that both Israel's exile and their ultimate rescue here in Esther were promised by God, but in different covenants. You might call them two different edicts. Ring a bell? One edict sentences them to death, but then another edict steps in to rescue them. And it turns out that the second edict that saved them was actually fulfilling a promise that God made centuries earlier. That's why Mordecai told Esther, "Deliverance for the Jews will arise." Where did he get that confidence? Not from the law. He must have known God's promise to Abraham. And what do all those edicts and covenants have to do with us today? More than you might imagine. We'll come back for that in part two of our epilogue. For now, read Esther 10 and... Wait, hold on. What's that, Grandpa? Oh, I can't believe I almost forgot. Yes, we finished the story. We can all say it now. If you're new here, this is a very real Jewish tradition. Not in the Bible, but it's fitting. Here goes. They tried to kill us. They lost. We won. Let's eat. L'chaim.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.